Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Hey, you know what? If you are stuck in your car right now on the I-10, we know that the eastbound I-10 between Phoenix and Casa Grande is closed. So we've got a very captive audience right now.
Sit back, relax.
I've got Steve Irvin from ABC 15 in here with me today. And there's a story coming out of Tempe that bears some discussion. Here's what we know. Officers in Tempe responded around 2:30 in the afternoon, 48th Street and Baseline, to a call of a suspicious vehicle. They get there. They find a teenager breaking into a car. Police say a boy got out of the car and took off running, and it looked like he was holding a gun. Officer chased him, told him to stop, put down the weapon, verbal commands, things along those lines. And according to Tempe police, the officer, quote, perceived a threat, fired a service weapon, striking the suspect. Here's the deal. At the end of the day, we have a 14-year-old boy who is dead. And we know that handgun was an airsoft gun.
We've talked to the family. ABC 15 talked to the family yesterday. And your heart goes out to them. They've lost their child. They've lost a brother. And they're raising a lot of questions about how this shooting went down and how this child wound up dead. Now, what Tempe police are saying is when they confronted this suspect, it appeared that he had a gun, which later turned out to be a replica airsoft gun, and they, quote, perceived a threat. Now, they haven't given us any further explanation as to what that means. Did the kid turn? Did he point the gun? Was he running away from them? What was that perception or threat? What caused that officer to fire? Now, we know that officer was wearing a body cam, and Tempe police have not released that body cam video. The family is demanding that they do, and demanding that they leave, that they release more information out there. And I think, in terms of public perception, all the officer involved shootings that we've had in the valley, certainly every one of them should be investigated thoroughly. Do Tempe police owe this family some answers? Do they owe the public some answers beyond we perceived a threat?
Of course, they owe answers. But you've been in this business a long time, just as I. You know that sometimes these things take time. There is an investigation going on. And yes, we want to see the body camera footage right away. In fact, KTAR has put in the request to get that body camera footage. But there is an investigation, and those investigations take time. So right now, this is what they're out there with. Are we going to learn more? We better learn more. There are a lot of questions that still need to be answered. And that family does need to know what happened. And Steve, again, we got Steve Irvin from ABC 15 in here with me today. Your TV station, ABC 15, spoke with the family, as you talked about a little bit earlier. And I want to play some of that audio and give our audience the opportunity to take a listen. This is the brother of the 14-year-old boy who was shot and killed Tuesday.
I mean, a police officer has a taser gun, right? Like, why not shoot a taser at him? I mean, he sees a young boy, you know. My brother wouldn't shoot. I know he wouldn't shoot.
You know, I get that. Oh, I don't even want to put myself in the position, Steve, of what that family is going through. But at the same time, you got to put yourself in the position of the police officer.
Right.
He doesn't know if this kid's going to shoot. He, you know, the whole, why didn't you use a taser? Why didn't you do that? We second guess, and everything's, you know, hindsight's 20/20.
And all of this happens when it happens in real time. It happens incredibly quick. And these police officers have to make an instantaneous decision. And all of these officers are facing an increased number of assaults and attacks on police officers on the street. In Phoenix, last year, the assaults on officers were up 45%. So officers are feeling that threat, and they're feeling that every day. And they know that they're trained to make those split-second decisions. They train in these shoot-or-don't-shoot scenarios all the time, and they have to make the call. And you can sit back and Monday morning quarterback this and hindsight it all you want and second-guess what the officer did. But at the end of the day, could you make the same decision? Could you make the right decision literally in a split second?
And you know what? A lot of journalists have gone to different police departments and have done that shoot-don't-shoot. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. And you get a taste of what officers go through. I don't want their job.
No, I've been through this training.
Do their job, and I have the utmost respect for those who put on a badge and a gun every single day to go out and protect our community. That being said, we as a community are still owed answers. Now, there are a lot of questions. I don't expect to have answers to those questions, you know, 24, 36, 48 hours later, but my heart still goes out to a mom, a mother, who no longer has her son.
If they want to tarnish my son, they are wrong. Apart from the fact that they killed him, they want to destroy him. No, I won't allow it. I want justice.
We all want justice. And I don't know who's trying to destroy whom in this point. There's emotions that are running high, as you would expect in a situation like this. And that's why, like, I try to stick to the facts. And you bring up a great question, Steve. What was the perceived threat? If this young man was running away from an officer and was shot, that's a problem. But does a body camera show that this young man raised what looked like a gun and pointed it at the officer? Well, then the officer would have to take action. We just don't know enough about this yet. And I have faith that we will.
Yeah, here's the interesting thing, too. The kid was apparently breaking into a truck. The guy that owns the truck says he has a fake gun in his truck and police may have mistaken that gun. So this apparently wasn't even the boy's airsoft gun. It belonged to the person who owned that truck. And his quote is, "I would like to tell the family that this young man should not have died." That certainly raises the specter about whether police acted properly here. But in fairness to Tempe Police and every member of law enforcement who's had to do this, all of these cases are investigated thoroughly. And we have seen cases where officers have been prosecuted when they haven't made the right choice or when they haven't made the right decision. I mentioned that I've been through some of the shoot or don't shoot training, and I can tell you that I shot some people in that training that I wasn't supposed to shoot because your adrenaline gets going and you're in the heat of the moment, and this actually was a foot chase. And so there's so many different factors here, and so many people are going to second guess every single second of it. And you can make a case that maybe that's not fair to officers, but at the same time, we expect that high standard of officers. We expect them to make the right decision. We expect them to be well-trained and to only use that weapon and only use deadly force when it's absolutely necessary and legal.
And I still don't know if we have enough information to discern one way or another on that statement, because nobody wants anybody shot and killed. OK, frankly, nobody wants that. And I don't think that officers go out looking to do that either. So we have to look at, this young man had what looked like a gun. How's an officer supposed to know that's not a gun? Did he point it at him? We don't know. Was he running away? We don't know. Still have to let the facts bear itself out. And if there was misconduct on the part of the Tempe Police Department and the officer, we're going to hold him accountable. I will absolutely hold that individual accountable. But I'm not going to go there just yet until I have the full breadth of information as to what took place. And we're not going to get that when this happened Tuesday.
Yeah, the issue I have with this is that there's a lot of finger pointing from people in the community and from police. And police are saying that they're facing more assaults. People in the community saying that police are more willing and using deadly force more often. We had a record setting year last year. The solution to this is not finger pointing, though. Ultimately, the solution to this is trying to figure out why there is so much violence and why there are so many different confrontations involving police and why there are so many instances of deadly force. And I don't think that is a solution that necessarily sits on the shoulders of police or the community or any one aspect or individual. I think it's one of those things where people have to really sit down and take a look and understand what's causing this and what the underlying cause of this is before we can start talking about solutions. We are expecting a report in Phoenix dealing with the number of officer-involved shootings that they've had in the last year. That report is expected to shed some light on some of the underlying causes. And hopefully it leads to solutions, because it's not good for police. It's not good for the community. If officers are really facing this much violence and having to use deadly force, that makes the job that much more dangerous for them. And officers have no interest at all in using a gun. I've met officers who literally spent their entire career, never fired their gun in the line of duty. And for most of them, if you talk to them, it is the very last thing they want to do and only have to do it in a situation situation where lives are threatened.
It's important to talk about because there have been, in Phoenix at least, record-setting number of officer-involved shootings last year. And right now, we have a new map tracker of all the officer-involved shootings in the Valley, not just in Phoenix, but in the Valley here in 2019. It's up at KTAR.com if you want to take a look at that and continue to follow the story as we try to figure out what exactly happened there at 48th Street and Baseline. I believe we will get answers. It's just going to take a little bit of time to flesh those out a bit. Okay. I got to admit, I'm a little nervous. Super producer Stevie Z, I'm a little nervous.
I've been the two Steves have been conspiring against you.
That's why I'm a little nervous. Okay, so you're going to want to stick around here. You know, we're going to get an update from Bob McClain in just a moment, but coming up after the headlines, Steve Irvin, ABC 15, has pitched a story. He's pretty gung-ho about it. There are pictures involved. I haven't seen them yet. I will see them live on the air, and we'll see where this goes.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
This is the place where you get all of your fashion advice, ladies, isn't it? This is the place where you bring up some surprises in the bedroom. And the newest fashion trend, the newest fashion trend is going to bring some big surprises here. Have you heard about the unicorn armpit hair movement? The unicorn armpit hair movement. That's right, ladies. You can let it go. You can let it grow. Those long, luxurious locks underneath your arm. And you can even add a little color.
Oh,
rainbow colors. Oh. This is a thing. And it's so sexy.
No, it is not.
It is a
thing. You said let it go and let it grow?
Let it go and let it grow.
Oh,
now,
man.
There are pictures out there. We purposely kept Pam in the dark about these pictures. I'm going to show her one of these pictures.
Okay.
Imagine me showing her one of these pictures.
All right, okay, I got it.
And let's listen to the reaction.
What is that? She's got like, it's like a rainbow, like a hedgehog taped underneath her armpit. What is that?
Yeah, she's gotten all French on you.
Oh, and man.
And then.
Oh, geez, the close-up.
And then she has. Oh, yeah.
There was a close-up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't need to see the close. What is going on here?
This is the longest I've ever had my armpit hair. I've gotten so many requests to do this. I'm finally doing it. I'm dyeing my armpit rainbow.
What?
So many requests. There's a big demand for this out there.
You're a dude. Okay. I'm a chick. I would never do this.
Yeah, I don't know.
Would guys like this? Is this something that you're like, hey, ladies, that's pretty hot.
No.
First off, we're talking about armpit hair.
Right.
Which is just something you shouldn't have to begin with, ladies.
Well.
And then.
Okay.
No, I'm going there, right? You shouldn't have armpit hair.
Tell
it's
that
gross.
To Madonna.
It's gross. It's just, it's gross even when the dude's hair gets long. Like, trim it, man. A little manscaping, shall we? But, like. And then to dye it? Who thinks this is a good idea? Where did you find this, Steve?
In 2019. It's actually Marie Claire, one of the top fashion magazines out there.
There's more pictures.
And the first month of the new year has been dubbed Janu-Hairy.
No, it is
an
not.
An ongoing celebration on social media encouraging women to grow out and show off their body hair.
What?
Women are dynamic, radiant, vibrant beings.
Yes.
So naturally, Janu-Hairy.
No.
Also got really colorful, and now it's in a number of rainbow.
Oh my gosh,
colors.
There are all kinds of pictures. What are you ladies doing for real?
This is supposedly all about body shaming, you know, that women should be able to grow out their hair.
Technicolor and deal with body shaming.
Well, because, you know, it's a natural, it's the way God made you. It's the way God made you.
Yeah, God makes us a lot of different ways, and we still change it. I think that one of the decisions we made to shave the armpit hair was a good decision that we made. I would advocate you guys take it up.
Yeah. I might go rainbow.
No,
I might go
that's
rainbow.
Not what I meant.
I might put Packer colors on there.
Oh,
or,
seriously, go Pack
maybe
go.
Your favorite team. Yeah,
a little green over here, a little yellow over there.
You can go with this.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you can.
What would your wife say about
all
that?
All kinds of colors. I might have to sleep in a different spot. My wife is the wise, common sense part of the partnership there, and so she might say that was a little bit too far.
Super producer Stevie Z, I'm going to drag you into this right now as the millennial on the show. Have you actually seen anybody?
No.
I mean, seriously, the Janu hairy? Okay, so maybe it's not like the Technicolor armpit hair, but yes, I just said that, folks. We're talking about unicorn-colored armpit hair. It's like rainbowed.
I tweeted out a picture, by the way, so everyone can see it.
Yeah. Oh, man, the close-up of that, too. Blah.
So, a little bit of... This has been around for a couple of years, apparently.
What?
Official YouTuber Official Rainbow Girl, back in 2016, uploaded a tutorial on how to dye your armpit hair a rainbow color. It racked up 616,000 views.
Because everybody was going, how dumb are you? Like, look at this chick that just dyed her armpit hair rainbow color.
You're going to see
and
it on the runway soon.
Like, no, you aren't.
Oh, yes, you are.
You see all kinds of crazy things on the runway that nobody ever wears in real life.
You're going to see pitless shirts coming out for women. It's going to be huge. I'm telling you, it's going to be huge.
Is this not a thing that existed in the 70s?
I think it still exists in some Eastern European countries.
Yeah, and it shouldn't. No, don't let it go and grow or whatever you just said.
Unicorn armpit hair.
This
the latest beauty trend of 2019. You heard it here first on the Bruce and Pamela Show.
Yeah, brought to you by Steve Irvin. Let me point that one out to you. Wow. Okay. Whew. Changing gears a bit here. You know, the crazy story of the girl in Wisconsin, Jamie Kloss, right? You know, she was captive 88 days and everybody was looking for her. Mom and dad were shot and killed. Well, she's been found, obviously. She rescued herself. So should she get the reward money? We'll talk about it next. KTAR News.
Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You know, I've been closely following the case of Jamie Kloss. This is the young lady, I believe 13 years old, who was kidnapped out of her home in Wisconsin after both mom and dad were shot and killed and then held captive for 88 days in a cabin before she was able to escape and, in essence, rescue herself. If you want to hear how a 911 caller told police that Jamie Kloss was found, well, here is that audio.
County 911.
Hi. I have a young lady at my house right now, and she says her name is Jamie Kloss.
Okay. Have you seen her photo, ma'am?
Yes, it is her. I 100% think it is her.
The entire state of Wisconsin had been looking for this young lady for months.
Okay. Did she show up walking?
Yeah, a neighbor just walked up with her to our house and asked us to call 911.
Okay. Hang on just a second.
Are you cold? Do you need a blanket or anything?
Okay.
Do you need anything to drink or water or anything? Okay.
And Steve, you know, when we started to get some of the details of what she went through during captivity, we find out that some of that came from this 911 call.
And she said, I am Jamie Kloss.
Yes. She said, he killed my parents. I want to go home. Help me.
It's a miracle. It's amazing. This was somebody who was held captive in a cabin, kept under a bed when this captor was not there. I think after 3 months, a lot of people probably thought there's no way she's going to be found alive. She was abducted, and unfortunately, it's just a matter of time before we find her body. And then she managed to escape. She was the one who freed herself from that cabin. She gets out. She goes running. She finds somebody who's out walking their dog. That person goes to this neighbor. They call 911. So these two people had a hand in getting the police there. And can you say they had a hand in rescuing her? Because there's about $50,000 that may be awarded to somebody because of this case.
So take a listen to this part of the 911 audio, because you talk about the two women who were critical in getting the help needed to that area. Listen to this.
Jamie, do you know when he's going to come back?
He thought he was going to come back home and see
me.
Who's going to come back?
his name is Dave Patterson. So we're kind of scared because he might come.
Yep.
So if the cops could get here soon, we would love
it. I have many deputies headed that way. I'm going to keep you on the line.
Yeah, okay. You bet she had many deputies.
Yeah, you better believe
way.
It. But
every
I mean,
cop in the state had been looking for.
When I read the transcript, because I read it before I actually heard that 911 call, you know, you're reading this and you're engaged in the story, and it didn't cross my mind. I'm like, yeah, I call 911 because this girl that the state had been looking for close to 3 months shows up on my doorstep, and we know that whoever took her shot and killed both of her parents. What's going to happen to me at my house now that she's here? Because he's going to do everything he can to get her back and protect the crime that he has committed. So it does beg that question. There's a $50,000 reward out there. And who should get it? Should Jamie get it because she rescued herself? Or should it be divvied up because of these two women that were critical in all of this? It's money. And for me, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that this young lady is safe. And I put myself in the position of either the woman walking the dog, who Jamie approached, who then took her to the woman's home, who called 911. If I'm either one of those ladies, I don't care about the money. I care that this young lady is safe. And if it's going to be awarded, have it go to her, have it go to her family, because she's going to have a lot she needs to unpack in the years to come.
Yeah, the woman who called 911 actually told CNN, Kristen Kasinskas, I believe is how you pronounce her name. She said she doesn't want the money. She said Jamie deserves the money because she was the one who got herself out. It's interesting in these rewards, often these rewards are put out there hoping that this guy bragged about it or talked about it or told somebody, and the amount of money is going to be enough for somebody who knows him or somebody who has heard this story to just sell him out, and so that they can get to there. And part of the reward came from law enforcement. Part of the reward came from the Genio Turkey company that actually employed her parents. I think Jamie should get the money. There's no question. She's going to need that. She's going to need a lot of help, probably a lot of therapy. Imagine going through a traumatic ordeal like this and what that bodes for the rest of your life. Money is going to take at least one worry away, or $50,000 is going to take some of those money worries away, because you know that some of the treatment, some of the things she's going to need, they're going to cost a lot of money.
But does the family need to hear from the monster's father? Jake Patterson, I call him the monster. He's 21 years old. His dad, Patrick, actually showed up to court. He sat on the prosecution side during the initial court appearance. A deputy asked him to move and sit on the defense side. Now, in between this, reporters had approached him, and he said he didn't really want to talk. He was just sobbing, beside himself, emotional, kind of just absolutely wrecked, thinking that his son could do this. And he said he had to get a note to the Kloss family. All I care about right now is Jamie's family, and I want to get him a note. And a deputy took him inside, and then when he came back out, reporters approached him again, and they asked, did you get the note? And he just kind of smiled and said, I'm sorry, I can't talk right now. I think what you're hearing in that, Steve, is a dad who can't come to terms with the idea that his son is just that, a monster. No parent ever wants to consider that, but this dad is having to face that reality.
I my heart goes out to any parent who has to deal with this, because whenever there's somebody who's a criminal, there's always a parent. And when that person is labeled a monster, you naturally think, what did I do? What did I not do? What happened here? I feel bad for the parents, you know, and I don't blame parents necessarily for these kinds of things. This guy was 21 years old. He was making adult decisions at this point. And I can't believe that there was anything in his past that his parents did that led him to this.
And reportedly, dad had been to the cabin and not knowing that this young lady was under that bed.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. We'll lighten it up here a little bit. The Facebook challenge, you know, that the whole like 10-year challenge. Maybe you've posted pictures of how you've changed over the last decade. It's harmless, right? No, not so fast. We're talking about that next here on KTAR News.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yeah, every time somebody says, ugh, I'm getting old, I'm like, yeah, you're getting old. I'm not getting old. And hence the reason why I have not participated in the 10-year challenge that it appears everybody and their grandmother has on Facebook. Steve Irvin from ABC 15 in with me. And Steve, I got to admit. Okay, I was going to say, I don't know. Have you? No?
Well, here's the thing. I just went on Facebook and looked at my, I'm not on my personal page. Then I've got a personal page, and then I've also got the one with ABC 15.
Yeah, yeah.
I literally haven't changed my profile picture from 9 years ago on Facebook. So
you kind of unintentionally did it.
Yeah, I kind of unintentionally, just because I've completely neglected the personal page. I just don't post
for
that much stuff
years,
on the personal page.
That's pretty funny.
I'm so busy posting stuff on the other page that I don't bother.
Sure. Okay. But you know what? A lot of people have bothered. The Facebook 10-year challenge, it's kind of fun. You know, you see how much have you aged. And a lot of times, you know, from like the 30 to the 40 or the 40 to the 50, you'll see some changes here and there. For most people, if they're going to post pictures, they're going to make sure they post the biggest ones. The best ones, rather. The biggest changes you'll see from, like, somebody who was 15 versus 25. Those are some big changes,
yep.
Okay? And it seems fun, and it's, you know, engaging, and everyone's doing it. But could it be harmful? We know that, like, Facebook used to have, like, all of these different, like, personality tests and take this survey and,
right.
You know.
And give us your social security number while you're at it. Yeah. I mean, what, all kinds of things.
What color are you? And you answer all these questions. Like, you're purple. And you're like, I never knew I was purple. Well, what they're doing there is they're mining data from you. And you've got a tech writer from Wire magazine saying, you know what, this 10-year challenge on Facebook, it's possible that it could be mined to train facial recognition algorithms on age progression and age recognition.
Right. And apparently there's something sinister about that, although I haven't figured out exactly what that is, because a lot of people have pointed out, hey, if you're going to look for your 10-year-old profile picture, where are you going to look for it? On Facebook. So Facebook already has the picture. But the other thing is, if it's going to be used for age progression to try to better those algorithms, is that bad? A lot of these age progression things are used for missing children and things like that, so that if a child disappeared 10 years ago, we can see what they might look like now, and if we have a greater database for all of that. The only problem I have with it is if they're really using it for that, tell us. I think any time that you give data to Facebook, any time that you make privacy settings and things like that on Facebook, the company should be absolutely open and honest with you about exactly what it's doing with your data, and make sure that the data that you're putting in there isn't something that you're necessarily giving the company permission to use.
Yeah, because we've seen that time and time again. Facebook, Cambridge Analytica, all of those things where they were taking our information, selling it to third parties. And you know, with this 10-year challenge, okay, facial recognition, age progression, things along those lines. Tech writers know a heck of a lot more about this than I do. Like, this is over my head.
Right.
And I didn't do it because I just don't care enough to put those two pictures next to one another. But I also don't see that how sinister it is. I think the fear of it, Steve, is we don't know what we don't know. Like I said, it's over my head. And in the past, I didn't know that Facebook was using those stupid personality quizzes to mine data. It wasn't until after the fact
right.
that you learned these things.
And we learned a lot of other things, too. Like they said they weren't necessarily selling certain pieces of information. And yet we've learned through reporting that they are doing that. I think one of the interesting things about these tech writers is they tend to see sinister intentions with big tech companies like Google and Facebook. And Facebook has given us reason not to trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And so something that may be entirely innocent suddenly becomes everybody speculating about, well, what's the sinister motivation? What are they really up to here? And that may be what's at play.
It may be what's at play. I think that people are still going to do it. Even after us talking about it, they're still going to do it. Even after talking about how much of your personal information has been sold to third parties, people still have their Facebook accounts. They didn't delete them. Even though we learn after the fact that they're mining everything for data and they know so much about you. I've got friends that are in advertising and how they can really hone in on a target demographic to just some really specific points is scary, yet I still have a Facebook page. Hey, you know what? Tomorrow, you can join Steve Irvin and I out at the 48th annual Barrett Jackson Collector Car Auction. It's going on over at Westworld there in Scottsdale. Now, you can check out some 1,700 rare and exotic cars all up for auction. There's some food and drink out there, too, with 40-plus vendors. So much more. Head on over to the events page at ktar.com for the details. And you know what? We also got some information on tickets up there for you as well. Well, you know, most people agree legislative immunity, pointless, except for the lawmakers who have it. We'll talk about this discussion and how it's getting a lot of attention down at our Capitol next on KTAR News.